Hi, everyone. Today's episode is going to be very different. I'm recording the episode solo. So I actually recorded this case with Arena maybe about a month ago, I think. And once we started editing the episode, I really just didn't like how it came out. Arena did a really great job, like she always does, with her questions and her responses. But I felt like I just did a horrible job. And not even to say that I do a great job at all of the other episodes, but this one, I was just not feeling it. So I asked Arena if she wanted to re-record it, but we thought it probably wouldn't be a good idea since her reactions wouldn't have been genuine. So literally today I was thinking about the case and about all of the time that I spent on my research for it, and I just decided to hop on and record this case solo. It already feels weird. I miss my girl Arena, but she and I should be back on recording a new episode hopefully next week. Okay, so for today's episode, I am going to talk about Sid and Nancy. So growing up, I listened a lot to punk music. That was the main genre that I listened to, and I still listen to it to this day. But a while ago, I had all my punk playlist on in my car, and a Sex Pistols song came up, which I was never really a huge Sex Pistols fan. I was more into like 7 Seconds, Dead Kennedys, The Clash, Minor Threat, bands like that. But anyways, I heard that song and it got me to thinking about the whole Sid and Nancy case. Now, I had always just known that it was said that Sid killed Nancy, and that's all I knew about it. I didn't know much about like their upbringing, anything like that. So that's what we're getting into today. So first, I'm going to talk a little bit about Sid's upbringing. So Sid was born as John Simon Ritchie, and he was born on May 10th, 1957 in South London, England, to his parents, Anne and John Ritchie. His mom dropped out of high school and joined the British Army while Sid's father was a guardsman at Buckingham Palace. And when Sid was 2 years old or so, he and his mom moved to Ibiza, Spain, where his dad had promised to join them there. In fact, I believe it was Sid's father who started the idea of moving to Ibiza. Anyway, his father never showed up. He basically disappeared from their lives, abandoning Sid and his mother. So fucked up, right? So he left Anne and his young kid alone in Ibiza with no financial help, nothing. So Anne was struggling. You know, she didn't have that financial assistance from her, you know, the father of her kid. So even though she did have a job and she was working as a typist, it was only part-time and it was not enough money to support her and Sid. So in order to try and make ends meet, she started selling marijuana for some extra income. And what she would do is she would buy the weed, and she said she was really good at making like pre-rolled joints. So she would roll these joints up, walk around the beach and start selling them. And even with like that extra money that she was getting from it, which, you know, it was a lot to help her, it still was not enough. Like she was still struggling. So I believe it was just under 2 years of her being in Ibiza. She just decided it was time for her and Sid to go back home to London, because at least in London, she could get the support of being around like her family and friends. And one of Anne's friends had told her, like, hey, the British High Commission in Spain would help you out with like the cost of your flight ticket back to London if you're pretty much jobless and a burden on the country, which Anne kind of was. So she ended up reaching out to the High British Commission, and they paid for her flight ticket, and she and Sid went back to London. Now, soon after they moved back to London, Anne met a man named Christopher Beverly, and the two ended up getting married when Sid was 8 years old, and that was in 1965. So, sadly, just 6 months after their marriage, Christopher ended up dying of kidney failure, Well, in one source it said, in multiple sources, some said kidney failure. And in other sources, I read that it was cancer. So not exactly sure how it was, but he did pass away. And it was said to have really hurt Sid because Christopher was really great with Sid. And he, you know, essentially lost his only father figure. So when Christopher died, Anne took it really hard, obviously, and she started using drugs. And she started using hard drugs. She was using heroin and opiates. And also at that time, she was moving her and Sid around a bit. So Sid didn't really have like stability. But by 1973, when Sid was around 16 years old, Anne was still using the drugs, but her ass was just deeper in that addiction. So deep in it that she wouldn't even know where Sid was most of the time. She was not even aware that Sid was attending Westminster Kingsway College, which was basically like a vocational and further education school that helped troubled kids. Excuse me, a girl's thirsty. Anyway, while there, Sid opened up to a school counselor about his depression. And he talked about how he was really struggling mentally. He even told the counselor about how he would occasionally torture animals as like a way to get some sort of control. Now, when I read that, that shit was so wild to me. I mean, that is just such a huge red flag. You would think that the counselor would have done something with that sort of information. But sadly, the counselor didn't do anything. At this time is also when Anne kicked Sid out of her house. So Sid, you know, told her that, hey, I have no place to go. And she said, I don't care, get out. So he got out. And while at that Westminster Kingsway College, Sid met John Lydon there, who he was also a student. And John Lydon is better known as Johnny Rotten. So anyway, Johnny Rotten introduces Sid to his two other friends who were also named John. And Sid and Johnny dropped out of school and they started squatting at various places. This is also when Sid Vicious got his name. So the way he got his name is Johnny had a pet hamster. And his pet hamster was named after Pink Floyd's Sid Barrett. Well, Sid hated that name, and I guess he didn't like Pink Floyd. And I'm actually so ashamed to say that I don't think I even know any Pink Floyd songs, which, yeah, awful, I know. Anyways, one day the hamster tried to bite Sid, so Sid said something like to Johnny, like, Sid is really vicious. And that's when the famous name was born. So Sid and Johnny and their friends, they were just like squatting. And the way they would get money is by basically street performing. So they would find a busy area, like in different cities nearby. And Johnny would sing while Sid would play a tambourine or an acoustic guitar sometimes. And they would play Alice Cooper covers. And it said that people would give them money just to stop because they were just so horrible. But in 1975, Johnny joined the formation of the band The Sex Pistols. Now, Sid, he wasn't in the band at that time. It was just Johnny Rotten and, you know, the other members. And a year later in 1976, so Sid was 19 years old, he played in a band called The Flowers of Romance. And he was a singer and a saxophone player for that band. It was also during that time that he learned how to play the bass guitar. And he taught himself how to play the bass guitar by listening to the Ramones album. So I thought that was pretty cool. Actually, the first song that my friend Andrew taught me in high school, because I used to play bass. I'm sure you guys are like, I don't give a fuck, bitch. But anyways, it was a Ramones song, the Hey Ho, Let's Go song. And that's the first song that I learned on bass. But anyway, around this time is also when the band The Damned learned about Sid and they wanted him to audition for their lead singer role, but Sid actually never showed up for the audition. So I thought that was funny because I never had known that. Anyway, in this same year, 1976, he actually played in Susie and the Banshees playing the drums at their first show, which was like some sort of two-day festival, which I thought that was pretty cool because I never even knew. I mean, even though it was just for that two-day festival, I never knew he ever played for Susie and the Banshees. And the next day after that performance, Sid went to a show of the Damned, and he was super high on meth. And he threw a glass bottle at the stage trying to hit the singer, but he missed the singer, Dave, but the glass bottle ended up shattering against like a wall or something, and it ended up blinding a woman in one of her eyes. He was arrested, and he did a short time in prison for that. In February of 1977, the bassist of the Sex Pistols, he was kicked out of the band. Not sure why, but anyways, Sid Vicious ended up replacing him. And Sid was super excited about this because he was a huge fan of the band and he went to all of their shows. In the following month of Sid joining the band, they ended up getting signed to A&M Records. And to celebrate, they had a party at a club called Speakeasy. And while they were having like that celebration party, there was a BBC DJ who hosted a music TV show. And he was there and Sid demanded that the Sex Pistols be guests on that show. And it's like, dude, like, come on, like approach it a better way, right? But, you know, he's high on meth, he's drunk, so he's not in the right state of mind. But he's just being a dick to this BBC DJ. And there was a fight that ended up coming about from it. And Sid jammed a broken glass bottle into the face of a BBC engineer. And the next day, A&M dropped the record deal. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about Nancy. So Nancy Spungen was born on February 27th, 1958 in Philadelphia to her Jewish parents, Deborah and Frank. When she was born, she had severe cyanosis, which is, it basically causes a bluish color in the skin and like your nail beds due to a shortage of oxygen in the blood. That happened because she was choked by her umbilical cord during delivery. In fact, she almost died from that. Nancy, she was also born with jaundice due to having high levels of, probably saying this word wrong, but bilirubin. Now, because of this, the first few days of Nancy being born, she was not able to be held, which is really sad because especially in those first few days of being born into this world, like, that's when parents get to do that whole skin-to-skin contact, which I feel is, like, so important. But anyway, she had to get blood transfusions and, you know, she was a baby, so she would squirm and cry and the staff would have to strap her down for these infusions, which is just like so sad. So in the first week of Nancy's life, she was not able to create that bond with her parents because also when you have jaundice, you're put into those like little, I think they're like little incubators. But Nancy's mom, Deborah, she wrote a book and it's called I Don't Want to Live This Life. And in it, she does talk about how Nancy was a really fussy baby. And she said she cried all the time. Nothing or no one could ever console her. And, you know, with most babies, once you carry them, they usually stop crying, but not Nancy. In fact, it seemed as if she hated to be carried and touched. And this was more than like, you know, you hear of like colicky babies. This was nothing like it. It was just way worse. It was like to the 10th degree. So when Nancy was 3 months old, Deborah and Frank took Nancy to her pediatrician and they, you know, voiced their concerns because they felt that there was something really wrong with her. Something more than just like a fussy colicky baby because Nancy would barely even sleep. She never slept for more than 1 hour intervals at a time. So the doctor prescribed baby Nancy liquid phenobarbital. Hope I said that right. But they prescribed it to her, who's just this little baby, to get her to rest and calm down, which is just like so wild to me. And when Nancy was 6 months old, one of her eyes started to cross and her tongue was just like starting to stick out, like for no reason. So it concerned, you know, her parents, Deborah and Frank. So they took her to the doctors again, but the doctors, they would always just say, it's not a big deal. Like, she's okay. And I don't know. It's just really sad because they were really trying. Anyways, the doctors would say she's okay. And now, despite all of these like issues, behavioral issues, Nancy was really smart. Like, as she got older, to be a toddler and to be a young child, she was really, really smart. So she never had, a problem intellectually. But as she got older, she would throw these tantrums. And if she didn't get her way, she would throw objects against the wall or at people. She would just destroy things. And if her parents tried to discipline her, she would threaten them. So the family was really scared of Nancy. They ended up reaching out to like so many different medical professionals, but nothing ever helped. None of them ever helped. Some even just would tell them like, she's not that bad. She's just acting out because she wants more attention, or she's acting this way because she's just too smart for her own good. They would just say things like, love her, excuse me, guide her. She's just bored. She's challenging you, stuff like that. But in an interview that Deborah gave, which is Nancy's mom, she gave this interview after Nancy's death, and she said she was able to get a release of Nancy's psychiatric reports. And she's seen years of all of these reports, and it's so sad, but the doctors actually knew something was wrong with Nancy. She had a number of doctors that wrote that they knew she was quite mentally ill and maybe a child schizophrenic. And it's even possible, or it was even possible, that she had a brain tumor, which is just so frustrating, because why would they not tell her parents any of this? Like, this is something they need to know, right? But none of that information was told to her parents. So she thinks that she seems like such a nice, smart woman. And she said that it was probably kept because the doctors knew that probably there was not much that they could do about it. Anyways, at 11 years old, Nancy was expelled from school because she missed so much class. When the parents would try to take her to school, she didn't want to go. And so she would actually like escape from the car, run away. Her parents would try to force her back into the car. But she would just continue running out. And so it was just so hard for them. So finally, they decided to send her to a boarding school called Denverview, something like that. But it was a boarding school in Connecticut. And it was supposed to help troubled kids. Now, Nancy did really well academically, like she always did. But she would lash out because she had behavioral problems, and she would lash out at the staff if she didn't get her way, because she was so used to her parents just giving in to her because Nancy was so stubborn, and as much as they tried to discipline her, nothing would come of it. But anyways, Nancy eventually tried to commit suicide when she was in there. She tried to slit her wrist with scissors, and it's said that she used harm as a way to control everything around her. And at this time, she was officially diagnosed as schizophrenic. And that's when she was 15 years old. So she ends up graduating from high school, and that was in 1964 at just 16 years old. I think she skipped a grade, if I remember correctly. And she decided to go to the University of Colorado Boulder. She ended up getting arrested in her freshman year of university for buying weed from an undercover cop. Then she was later arrested for storing stolen property in her dorm room, so the school ended up kicking her out. Now, she's 17 years old, okay? And Nancy, she took off to New York City. She didn't want to stay at her parents' house. She went to New York City, and that's when she found the whole music scene. That was like at its peak, and she loved it. Once there, So sorry, guys, there's something itchy in my throat. But anyways, Once there to get money, she became a sex worker, and she would buy drugs for bands that she would go and watch play, and she would give these band members drugs. Like, it was her way of trying to get in good with the bands. She was definitely a groupie. And so she was just super into this whole punk scene, and she was well known among everyone in it. She would go to CBGB, and her goal was to date any member in a well-known band, which it reminds me a lot of like Courtney Love. For any of you who have watched any documentaries on Courtney Love, a lot of Nancy's ways seem very similar to Courtney Love's. Anyways, in 1977, Nancy followed a band called the Heartbreakers from New York City to London. So she took off to London. And once in London, that's when she met Sid. So she met Sid, and they both just immediately hit it off. They felt something was there between the two, and straight away they became an item. Now, it's said that Sid's group of friends, they really didn't care for Nancy. They said that she was really toxic, and she brought him down, and she brought out the worst in him. It was even said that they were at some bar or club, and there was a really pretty girl that was trying to go around the band, and she wasn't trying to, she wasn't doing anything disrespectful to Nancy as far as like touching Sid and a certain way or anything, but Nancy just told Sid, push her down the stairs. And without hesitation, Sid pushes that woman down the stairs. So he just pretty much did anything that he told her to do. And even though it was very evident that they loved each other, they were just super toxic for each other. They would have these wild fights that were not only verbal, but it got physical. And in 1978, the Sex Pistols was set to go on a two-week U.S. tour. Now, the band members did not want Nancy to join this tour. She was always around. Everywhere Sid went, Nancy was there. And, you know, they just kind of got tired of it, which I totally get. And they set this strict rule saying that she cannot join the Sex Pistols for this two-week tour. And they also told Sid that he needed to go on methadone to stop the heroin use and whatnot, because at this time, you know, he'd been using drugs for a long time, but it seems like his addiction was getting even worse. So anyways, at this time, this is also when the band had so many problems. Like, Johnny Rotten was barely speaking to anyone. So they go, they do that two-week tour without Nancy. And their last performance of that short tour was at the Winterland Ballroom in San Francisco. And Johnny Rotten actually said to the crowd at the end of the show, he said, let me see, ever get the feeling that you've been cheated? And that was the end of the Sex Pistols. They ended up breaking up. On the flight back to New York City from San Francisco, at that time, I should also mention, Nancy was in New York City waiting for Sid. So anyways, on the flight back to New York City from San Francisco, Sid slipped into a diazepam methadone-induced coma, and he was rushed to the hospital in Queens, New York, where the doctor told him if he didn't quit drinking and doing drugs, he would be dead in 6 months. But of course, that didn't stop Sid. So anyways, at that time, Sid and Nancy, okay, let's see. Sid was 21 and Nancy was 20 years old. So they end up moving. The Sex Pistols broke up after that San Francisco show, and Sid and Nancy end up moving to New York, and they move into the Chelsea Hotel in August of 1978. Gosh, excuse me. Now, the Sex Pistols, like I mentioned, they were not together anymore. So Sid was trying to do his own solo thing, and Nancy was his manager. In October 11th of 1979, Sid and Nancy, in the deepest of their drug addiction, they were in their hotel and they were using their drugs. At around 2:30 a.m., Nancy asked Sid's bodyguard for drugs. The bodyguard, he wasn't able to find any drugs. And he said that she had a stack of money that was around $1,400 cash at that time. And she told him that, you know, go out there, use this money to purchase drugs. Now, other neighbors inside the hotel did report that evening into the early wee hours of the morning. There was a lot of noise coming from Sid and Nancy's hotel room. So they were used to having that be like the party room. Their friends constantly went in and out of that hotel room and they all used drugs together. They all drank and partied together. Some of the neighbors complained to the front desk about the ruckus coming from Sid and Nancy's hotel room that night specifically. So there was an employee from the hotel that went to their room to ask them to just settle down. And the employee said that he's seen Sid outside of the hotel room banging on the door trying to get in. And he said that Sid was really out of it and he was just sort of wandering around. And then there was another neighbor that said Sid knocked at her door at around 5:30 a.m. And when she seen him, he was covered in blood. At around 7 a.m., neighbors said they heard a woman moaning. And it wasn't like sex moans, but it was just moans. Like they were very different from sex moans. And at around 10 a.m., Sid woke up and he started to look around for Nancy, okay? So he's looking around, doesn't see her. He found her in the bathroom with a stab wound to her stomach area. He went down to a clinic that was down the street to get methadone. So, you know, keep in mind, he sees her with that stab wound to her stomach, but instead of calling 911, he goes down the street to get methadone. Because you have to also keep in mind, he's an addict. And when you're deep into that addiction, like, all you care about is your fix and doing whatever you have to do to not feel sick. So when he gets back to the hotel room, he said she was not responsive at that point. She was covered in blood. Like it was more blood than when he initially seen her. So he said he washed off the knife. That was, now mind you, I should say when he woke up, he thought at first that he urinated on himself because he felt like wetness, but it was actually blood on that bed. And then there was a knife on that bed. So he calls down to the front desk to tell them that Nancy was badly injured and he said that he needed help and to call 911. So Sid told the first responders that he didn't know what happened, but he did tell them, I didn't harm her. It wasn't me. He said he woke up and he found her that way. Now, later, he did say that they both took a lot of drugs the night before, and he said he fell asleep into a deep, deep sleep due to the drugs at around 1 a.m. And I know someone very close to me who is also an addict, currently sober, but I have heard the stories, and I'm very close to this person. And, you know, based off of what this person told me is when you do use those type of hard drugs, you're like knocked out cold. So anyways, he falls asleep due to the drugs at around 1 a.m. He said she must have fallen on the knife. Now, obviously, the detectives thought that it sounded strange because here said Sid wakes up from his drug-induced sleep at 10 a.m. and he sees Nancy slumped over in the bathroom with a knife in her stomach and he doesn't remove the knife or anything. He just goes about his morning to head down the street to the methadone clinic. So that's kind of weird. And then he comes back, he sees more blood around the wounded area, and then he cleans the knife that was on the bed. And then that's when he decides to call for help. But also, you know, when you are an addict and you're deep into your addiction, you're not thinking straight. Not making excuses for him. But anyways, that's just what it is. Now, all of the blood that was found on the bed, it wasn't in the bathroom. So when Nancy got this injury, it seems to have happened on the bed. And then somehow she got to the bathroom. How she got there, I do not know. Sid said she must have walked herself in there. And after, you know, interrogation from the detectives, Sid did say yes. He ends up saying yes, I stabbed her. He did it because he was a dirty dog. That's literally what he said. I'm a dirty dog. I did it. He said that Nancy treated him like shit and he wanted to die a worse death. So then they end up arresting him and they charged him with second degree murder. He ends up getting released on $50,000 bail. An autopsy was conducted and it said that she died from a 1-inch wide stab wound to her abdomen. What was weird to detectives is that the stab wound didn't immediately kill her. It took time for her to bleed out. So why wouldn't she call for help, right? Like, why didn't she just call 911 or the front desk from her hotel room, or hell, even walk out the door and bang on somebody's door? Like, why didn't she do that? Because the stab wound, according to them, it wasn't tragic, I guess, enough. That's probably not the right word, but it wasn't enough to prevent her from walking. It was not injuring enough to prevent her from walking. So that was just something that, you know, they wondered. But while out on bail, Sid, he went to a nightclub and he ended up hitting on a roadie from the band called Skafish. And the roadie's boyfriend saw this, didn't like it, so he confronted Sid about it. And Sid being Sid, he smashed a beer bottle in the guy's face, which ended up putting Sid back in jail where he spent another 2 months, but then he was bailed out again. He then went to live with his mom. Now, if you remember, his mom was an addict herself, and I should also mention it said that as a teen, her and Sid would do drugs together. They would do heroin together. They would do meth together. She would supply him with drugs. And in interviews, she actually admitted to it. So it's not just rumors. Anyways, out on bail again, he goes to live with his mom and he ends up getting a new girlfriend during this time named Michelle. Now, Sid attempted suicide during that time and he even spent time at a detox center. And on February 1st of 1979, while Sid was awaiting trial, he was at a small party at a friend's house. And at midnight, he shot up heroin. A lot of them there, they were partying. So he shot up heroin, which, remember, he was in jail. He even spent time in a detox center. So his tolerance was much, much lower than what he was used to. So he shot up the heroin at the party. And while he seemed out of it for a couple of hours after that, his friends that were there, they did say that eventually, like, he was fine some hours later. So they see that he's okay. They don't feel like they need to call 911 or anything. And he ends up leaving the party and he goes back home to his mom's house. And the next morning, his mom finds him dead. Sid is lying naked in his bed. Sid died of an overdose at only 21 years old. Anne found a paper in one of his pockets that said, "We had a death pact. I have to keep up my part of this bargain. Please bury me next to my baby. Bury me in my leather jacket, jeans, and motorcycle boots." So Sid Vicious died from a heroin overdose on February 2nd, 1979. Also, I should mention his girlfriend, Michelle, was also there, and I believe it was a friend, and it was in a Greenwich Village apartment. The police, once the police were called, they did say that a syringe, a spoon, and the heroin residue was discovered next to his dead body also. And when they were speaking about his death, there was a police spokesperson. Gosh, excuse me. They said that they believe that Sid had no intentions of killing himself. Even though he had wrote that note, they feel like it was an accident. So I don't know. Some people say it was intentional due to the letter. Some say it was an accident. But whatever it is, you know, it's still very, very sad. And that was the case on Sid and Nancy. And it's just really sad because it seems like, in regards to Nancy's parents, it seems like they did their best to understand what was wrong with their child. And they just weren't given the information that they really needed at the time. Like, and she also did say, Nancy's mom, in an interview, that Nancy had tried committing suicide on multiple occasions. So, like, they kind of question, I think, like, whether it really was Sid that murdered her or if it was something that Nancy did on her own. I don't know. A lot of people who knew the both of them, they said, yes, they had a very toxic relationship, but they said they didn't believe that Sid was capable of murdering Nancy. Again, they were both super deep into their drug addiction, and they had lots and lots of drugs in them. And that night into the early evening, Sid was just so out of it. His friends that were also there that night said that Sid was like, he was laid out on the bed, basically comatose. And when the police got there to arrest him, like to question him, and when they were interrogating him, he could barely even walk or even like finish a sentence for that matter. There's a video on YouTube where it was Sid and Nancy on a bed and they were being interviewed in their room and they were both so messed up. I don't remember the name of it. In my source notes, I'll find it and I'll link it. But it's so sad to watch because they're just, Sid is just nodding off and Nancy keeps trying to wake him up, and it's just so awful. And like I mentioned before, I have someone very close to me who is a heroin addict, and it's just really sad to see. And this whole story is just very, it's just such a sad story altogether. And again, like, so he was already super drugged up, and I don't know. It's just a sad situation, guys. Do I think that Sid killed her? I don't know. Do I think that she committed suicide? I do not know. So it's just weird to me because although when he first called, he said she was badly injured and it was not his fault. But then he eventually confessed to the crime because he said he's a dirty dog, but then he later denied it, claiming that, you know, he was asleep when she died and he woke up and found her that way. I don't know. There's so many theories on how she died, and we don't really know to this day because, you know, Sid died awaiting trial. But there's lots of different theories. There's actually a theory about that bodyguard where she asked him to go purchase drugs. His name was Rocket's Red Glare. And it's also thought that he possibly killed her. So there's like theories that he was the one that killed her for like the money. Some think that it was like a robbery or like a drug deal gone bad. Some say that she was so dramatic that she probably would have stabbed herself, since she used to, you know, threaten to harm herself when she was younger as a way to get control. I don't know. Anyways, it's just a sad case altogether. Thank you, everyone, who takes the time to listen to this podcast. It would really help us out if you guys comment on our post on Instagram, or you rate, like, leave a comment on like Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Thank you so much. Hope you guys have a great rest of your day. Bye.